Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
So with an upcoming election cycle and an off year, one of the most important things you can do is vote in your school board election. So this episode is about why school board elections matter, and more tangentially, why public schools are so important to American society. So let's start with why public schools exist and their purpose.
Public schools is an attempt to basically create a workforce that's both ready to be indoctrinated under capitalism and also go fight a war. But along the way, it actually does cause good in society by creating a literate population. Individuals can do math, they can write, they know science, they know history. Now, we can argue whether or not it's wrong history, the right history, you're doing math the wrong way, the right way. But we do know it is a public service in which society has grouped money together and resources to train a group of kids who would otherwise probably have no actual education because their parents are working.
So we want to differentiate between the existence of public schools and their intent and perhaps deficiencies with the implementation of public schools.
Absolutely. So public schools, again, Thomas Mann went out, studied the Prussian model, which was militaristic, came back and he created a distributed model of school districts with the idea that children should be separated and grouped together by age group. Because functionally, maturity is roughly age related, and then you can throw at them the same information over and over again, and you can create a group of individuals that all know the same thing. The good part about this, though, is that it teaches a whole lot of people the fundamentals of reading, writing, and arithmetic and science. It is one of probably our best social programs that we have in the United States. Because without it, again, groups of individuals would have no education at all. It would be reverted back to the fiefdom days in which only the lords could read.
So if we're going to vote up or down on preserving the institution of public schools, how would you vote?
I'm voting up. There's nothing more important than a public school in any area. A lot of the concern we have here in discussion is that a lot of our institutions have been converted from public-minded to privatization, gaming the system for money. And we see that all over the place with charter schools or private hospitals or deficient public libraries or parks that aren't invested in. Or there's a lot of things that in society that we cherish and we say we cherish, but maybe aren't taken care of the same way. And same thing for schools.
So one of the key principles of public schools is that literally everybody between a certain age and another certain age can attend and receive an education. And this education isn't free because it is derived from tax money and all that economic stuff that we're not going to focus on. But if you are a kid, you are roughly, what, 6 to 18?
Roughly that, yeah.
You can attend school and learn things. Now, there's absolutely debate about whether the things you're learning are propagandized or useful, and we acknowledge those issues. For example, there should be a class that teaches you how to do basic stuff like interact with the police and change your oil and buy large ticket items like a car or negotiate with your landlord. That should all exist, but it doesn't. But that doesn't mean the concept of public schools is flawed.
Primarily what schools do as the cornerstone or anchors of society is it teaches your kids or the community's kids rules and etiquette of society, mostly through rote memorization and just movements and just ideas of you should sit still and listen. And it's kind of just teaching people the functional form of society. Now, does some kids get left behind a little bit? Yep. Does it fit the bill for everybody? It does not, right? Everybody learns differently. But all in all, it hits the masses. The next thing it does is it's a physical building in the area, in the society that's a landmark. And if most of the people in your town or city grew up there, it is something that they have a shared value in. I went to that school too. Oh, I know this teacher, right? Oh, I went to this potluck. Oh, I donated money here. Oh, the football game, right? I'm part of the boosters club. I bought the coupon book or whatever it is, coupon card for a booster. Whatever it is, you're some part of that society. So it actually is an anchor to your local community.
So a school district at the end of the day is a very community-based geographic area, literally a physical geographic boundary that's usually pretty compact. It is typically segmented into community-based kind of population centers. You end up with rich districts next to poor districts. And the school district is typically drawn along that border for a whole bunch of economic reasons. But at the end of the day, your community has autonomy over the actions and education that your children will receive in the local public school. And that's good because it's local autonomy, it's local self-determination.
We know that schools in the community are only probably as good as the property tax and values.
So there are issues with funding where poor school districts receive more money than rich school districts, and so there's an imbalance there. But that's not necessarily a problem of public schools as a concept. It's an implementation issue.
Wait, did poor schools receive more money?
They can, and sometimes they don't at the same time. So poor schools will receive more money federally because they're, you know, underachieving, and so they need more money thrown at them. While rich schools will typically have property tax levies so that all the kids get another fucking iPad or something.
Yeah, that's actually one of the deficiencies, is that we've converted the tax on the property portion of it. And again, it's an imbalance. And we can talk about donations to the schools and the PTAs and the boosters. And if you live in a rich community, those things exist so you can prop up the schools and the sports and all that. But what it comes down to is that for a majority of individuals that live in poverty, the school system is the most consistent thing that they have. They have consistent adults in their lives. They have consistent routines, and they get a meal mostly. If they're Title I school, they get free breakfast in the morning when they arrive, and they get free lunch during the day. And that could be the majority of the calories they take in the poor areas. And it's really important to understand that this is a cornerstone institution, and to say to get rid of it, like some of the anarchist dickheads on the internet say, is fundamentally flawed. Again, we can argue about the content. We can argue about who actually benefits from it. But at the end of the day, in the poor areas, the kids are the ones who benefit.
And that's why running for school board is important, because there are issues, but the school board is supposed to be from your community, and it is. I think most school boards probably have a residency requirement, and that's good.
They will. Yep.
So if you have an issue with how your school's operating, you hate the superintendent, who is typically appointed by the school board.
Yep.
You yourself should run for school board, or you should take an interest in who is running. In most cases, the people on the school board are on the school board because they have incentive to be on the school board. Now, in poor neighborhoods, there's less incentive. If you're poor, why do you have any desire to be on the school board? Because you're poor. You're probably spending all your time working.
Yeah, fighting for survival.
Naturally, just based on demographics and economic station, poor school districts are typically not represented on the school board by poor people, because poor people don't have time. So that's one of the structural problems with public schools and how school boards are set up. And that's why it matters that you find people in your community to vote for that hopefully actually care about the community and aren't interested in directing the bus contract to their brother's bus company.
The bus is a great example of prioritization and neoliberal mentality, in which you get rid of the core group of individuals who care for your kids during the most important time, which is transportation. And you remove their ability to care because you are now scraping the barrel for drivers. And it's not about the poor worker or the other worker or the better worker. This is more about, can you attract individuals who give a shit at $12 an hour? And the answer is no, because the fundamental flaw in capitalism is that you're supposed to care about your job. But there are jobs that you should care about the people that you're with, and that is the individuals who can form a bond and have a consistent bus route and consistent interaction with kids. And the prioritization takes that away because now it's for profit.
So in some school districts, and I don't know how prevalent this is nationally, a school district will own and manage the buses for the school district. They physically own and operate the bus system. And that's good for a number of reasons. It allows central planning. They have their own resources. But most importantly, it ensures that the district provides transportation as part of their operating budget. It doesn't attempt to externalize some key service. And getting kids to and from school is like the most important thing, because it doesn't matter how good your school is if kids can't get to it.
Or you get stuck, or the kids die. I mean, like, come on.
If there's a snowstorm and the bus company like literally strands the kids on a cold bus, which literally happens, and kids die every year as a result of this. Like, not a joke if you're from the South. This happens in the North, where private bus companies literally don't pick kids up and the kids freeze to death.
Yeah. Or they get severely hurt, frostbitten. I mean, there is no incentive during prioritization at all besides money. So what is your incentive to do a good job taking the kids to school? You don't have any.
And from a school board perspective, if you have something to gain as a result of privatizing school buses, well, then you have an incentive to be on the school board. And those are the kind of people that you want to actively seek out and attempt to remove from the school board.
Yep. And there's another group of weirdos, and that's the ideologues that are trying to push a religious or conservative agenda more than their shitty neoliberal friends. It's the anti-masker, the anti-vaccination, the we need to bring God back into the school of nonsense. We got to stand for the flag and repeat the Pledge of Allegiance and worship the flag. Or, you know, there needs to be more sports in school, or the volleyball team should have to wear pants, or the cheerleaders need to, you know, be in furry costumes or something weird. Just individuals who have really skewed ideas of what school is meant to be, and they're pushing it from a ideology point of view.
Another good example of an issue that might not be partisan would be, how do you deal with transgender bathrooms?
There's only two genders, so what do you mean?
And you'll have people run for school board that literally think that, and they have time on their hands to run a fucking school board campaign with that belief.
And they'll get support because it's an ideology of the Christian right. They'll get it. They'll win on that. Because you're talking about 100 votes. In most school districts, you're talking about 100 votes. That's it.
So most people don't even know what school district they're in, and they certainly can't name a member of the school board. So this is a very uphill battle, but it absolutely matters for shit like transgender bathrooms. It's a completely obvious solution, and you have people that literally spend their time going out of their way to, like, completely destroy the lives of completely innocent kids.
But there are even more mundane things that they fight over. Columbus Day. Should we celebrate Columbus Day?
Well, we should call it Indigenous Genocide Day if we're going to celebrate it.
If we're going to celebrate it, right? Should we call it a Christmas party or a holiday party? I mean, these are things that inclusivity matters. And if we talk about from, and I only call it extreme, if we talk about from trans bathrooms down to religious holidays, I mean, those things matter to the kids that go to the school. It's not even part of the curriculum. It's how are we going to build a generation of individuals who are accepting, who are willing to participate in society, and have the tools and skill sets needed to be functioning adults when their time comes to lead the country?
We actually expect more out of our kids than we do the adults that run schools for the most part.
Yep.
And for the record, we believe that all school bathrooms should be gender neutral. We did an episode very early on that talked about all the building code implications and why completely gender neutral bathrooms everywhere is probably an optimal economic solution from a neoliberal perspective. And it enfranchises all participants that bathroom.
And what it's done is it's caused an issue and stress amongst a minority of individuals.
Well, the four weirdos that all have red signs that have created a cohesive slate of candidates wants to decide what bathroom your child can use because they are God-fearing people and know better.
Because Trump won and God loves you. What this comes down to is, as a worker, we have used schools as a way to propel us beyond pure slavery if you follow the rules of school and go to college or whatever. You're selected to go out there. If you don't follow the rules of school, we basically throw you to the side and say, you had your chance, good luck. It's the school board that decides at what level you filter at, primarily. Whether or not you offer an adult GED program. You know, whether or not you have community programs like after-school care that are, you know, funded. Whether or not you have curriculum-based after-school programs to help individuals or tutelage or require a golden hour or whatever you want to call it, where the teachers have to give you time to do homework. Or whether or not you've modeled behavior off of other people and you're fundamentally there for the students, or you're fundamentally there just for the school board and taxes. That's why it's so important.
And there's a lot of resource allocation that goes into schools from a school board perspective. So most public schools at the high school level should have stuff like wood shop, power tools, table saws, stuff like that, because vocational training is important. Welding, small gas engines, all that shit should exist. And guess what? Those facilities can be used, like you said, for adult education and enrichment, and it can just be used by the community at large during off hours.
Yep.
Why should a resource the community paid for be closed on Saturday and Sunday?
And it's not, because on Sunday they allow the school to be rented out for churches. So again, you have a school board who will selectively filter who can use a facility based on their ideology. We advocate basically that because a school is a cornerstone of society in your community, that it should be treated as such. Community gardens in the park, community tools, so you can actually have maker events and people can not have to buy their own tools. They have shared events. People can train and teach each other common skills. Students have a safe place to go to when they need to go someplace. Students have a place where they can feel like part of society and part of each other. I mean, school is really important. And that's why we also advocate for engagement in the schools, which is why we're pushing to join the school board. But there's other ways that you can engage, right? You don't have to join the school board. You can get on committees. Zoning committees are huge. Or rezoning committees, I guess they maybe they're called, in which you have to determine where you move kids to and from. Busing policy. There's so much stuff that schools need that you can join and help out with.
And it's all about resource allocation. And if you're 100%. Not part of the in crowd, your resources will be directed towards somebody else's pet project. And that pet project is generally profit driven.
Yeah.
Schools are generally one of the major resources of a community. You can do stuff like room rentals. I want to have an event. I want to teach people how to crochet. I should be able to rent a room at the school at a reasonable time, 7 p.m. for free, let's say, or $5 or some nominal cost. Should be easy, should be accessible. The pool, if there is one, have, you know, free swim with the lifeguard on the weekends to help kids to learn how to swim. All of that stuff is a massive sunk cost that the community has already incurred that can be just used a little bit further to actually provide value in the community. So I used the example of a swimming pool, and there's a debate that we'll get into about whether sports should even be a part of public schools, because they exert a lot of resources, and the purpose of public schools is to educate people, not necessarily to provide them access to sports.
It comes a time when some people think that sports is their way into scholarships. Because we have turned high school into basically a minor league for colleges. So there's an entire group of individuals who can only really attend a college on a sports scholarship. So when we argue that we don't believe that sports should be in schools, we are cognizant that the material conditions of a certain population will be affected. But the bulk majority of the individuals in the school are not going to see the impact of this. There are 40 kids on the football team of a school with 500 kids. You have acres of land devoted to football that could be devoted to things like community gardens. Simple, right? Feeds kids year-round. Greenhouses. Tech centers. Like actual real-life essential skill building. Football is not a skill building essential thing. It's a hobby to go play.
So at a federal level, the purpose of public schools is to educate, not to provide access to sports. Like, literal statement that can't be debated. We're not saying that sports isn't important, but it should be up to the community. So if a community wants to, say, create a sports administration as part of the city or something, let the local community choose. You can have your own board set up for that, where they have a specific focus on sports. And if the community wants to spend money on it, fine.
Spend money on it. Yep.
But we need to separate the education of children from sports. And the primary argument that we have for this is that we can't teach every kid how to read and write in the United States. So until we can do that, we shouldn't be spending resources on sports.
The literacy rate in North Korea is 100%.
If you believe the numbers, right?
Yeah. Same with Cuba.
100% of nations under a U.S. embargo have 100% literacy.
The literacy rate in the United States, they did not report to the UNESCO in 2015.
What the United States' literacy rate was.
Yeah. Holy shit. According to the U.S. Department of Education, 54% of U.S. adults lack proficiency in literacy, reading below the equivalent of a sixth grade level.
But I'm sure glad they got to play football in high school.
This is where the neoliberalism mentality fucking dies. They argue that we're a meritocracy, which means that the merit of the individual is what leads to their success. Except that half of the population can't read. And reading, if you don't know this already, is one of the most important skills because it communicates to you basically contractual information. If you cannot read your lease, you don't know that you're fucked after 12 months. Or your mortgage, or your credit card with the balloon interest rate, or your car, or signs, or communicating to your kids or friends and families what you mean, or making a coherent plan for anything in your life, or last will and testament, if you have anything to give besides debt. And this is primarily the reason why Facebook memes are the main messenger for news. 7-word sentences, 8-word sentences that are easy to digest with a pictogram. And this is why we argue that being part of the school board or being part of your community and actually having strong schools is fundamental for anything the worker wants to do in the future. It's really hard, even if you're in a union, to fight the boss if half of your members can't read. If they can't even read the union contract and know whether or not they're getting screwed over, how can they make an informed decision? So that's primarily the issue here. Schools tend to be one of the focal points of a community, and it's one of the only ways for us to teach the next generation of workers how to fight capital. And we do that by having a high literacy rate, and the most efficient way for everybody to learn how to read is through school.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.